assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So this is May 7th, 2017, and we're going to be looking at how to deal with our material and spiritual life. Do you have people move? Yes, because this Prabhu behind you, he's directing traffic. What would you like?
Matsi, I'm just asking everyone to come forward so that devotees who come from outside can get some.
And you too? Okay, why doesn't everybody move forward? 1 yard.
Yeah,
please. Or 1 meter if you're born outside of America. Okay?
Please come forward. Everyone,
everybody, one yard or 1 meter.
1 meter.
The meter people are going to move a little bit further ahead than the yard people. It's about 3 inches different, right?
3.37.
Thank you very much for being here. Most of you have come from Michigan, huh? But our family lived in Detroit for 10 years.
Mommy?
Okay. So by the way, children are welcome. We're not disturbed by children. Unless they start screaming. So if the children start screaming, they should be taken out. But otherwise, if they're just being children, they can stay. So we're going to start out here looking at something that Srila Prabhupada says, that there are two kinds of activities, conditional and constitutional. So this is all from Bhagavad Gita 9:30. Can we turn off some more lights here?
This
light off, yeah. Oh, definitely better. Okay. Yes. Can you see it better now?
Yes.
So, Srila Prabhupada says here that for protecting the body or abiding by the rules of society and state, there are different activities, even for the devotees. In connection with the conditional life, and such activities are called conditional. So we all have these. We may be devotees, but we have to brush our teeth, we have to take a bath, we have to eat, we have to maintain a place to live. So besides these, a living entity who is fully conscious of his spiritual nature and engaged in Krishna consciousness or the devotional service of the Lord has activities which are called transcendental. Such activities are performed in his constitutional position, and they are technically called devotional service. So this second statement could be applied on the platform of a practicing devotee, a sadhaka, or a perfect devotee, a siddha. For the siddha devotee, this means someone who's realized their eternal form in Krishna Lila, and externally they may be taking a bath or going to work, but internally they're serving the Lord according to their particular mood. But this can also apply to the sadhaka, that the practicing devotee, even one who is not realized, that even at such a devotee, as they're going through the different things of their day, and at certain times particularly, they're going to be focused on their relationship with Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada in this purport goes on to say something that I think is very important. He says, in the conditioned state, sometimes devotional service and conditional service in relation to the body will parallel one another, but then again, sometimes these activities become a opposed to one another. And I think we all experience this, isn't it? That sometimes there's this nice harmony between what we have to do in order to live in the world and maintain ourselves in the world and our Krishna consciousness, and sometimes these things don't seem to go together at all. I remember having a devotee in Mumbai who was an eye doctor. She asked me, "I don't know what to spend my time reading. Should I be reading the devotional books or should I be reading about my profession?" She says, "If I don't continue to read in my profession, I won't be able to keep up with my activities. I won't be able to be a good doctor. And at the same time, you know, I want to read about Krishna, and I have a limited time every day to read. What should I read?" So this can be a problem, isn't it? Yes, I mean, that was just a very practical problem. Or some people have a job that starts at 6 in the morning. Yes? Or I've visited many homes where the woman may not work, but starting at 4 in the morning, she's in the kitchen, because she has to prepare some food for her husband to go to work and for the children to go to school. And so she doesn't even think about sadhana until 8 o'clock in the morning. So I've seen many situations like this where there seems to be some opposition. So today we're going to look at four areas of difficulties between our material and spiritual life. Now, our plan is that next weekend for Festival of Inspiration, we're going to be talking about these same things in an extended way. So our plan is that next weekend we're going to spend 2 hours on each of these topics. So if any of you want to take the long drive back to Vrindavan next weekend, that's what we plan to do. So today we're going to discuss them just very, very briefly and just give some general ideas of how we can deal with this. We're not going to be looking at, you know, the kind of specificity and interaction that we hope to have next weekend. So we're going to look at 4 areas today. The first is that it may seem hard to be absorbed in the transcendental. When does Rupa Goswami say we should think about Krishna? All the time. When does he say we should forget about Krishna?
Never.
Anybody who's been successful at that? So we may feel that it's hard, and we may say, well, I can think about Krishna when I go to Vrindavan, Mayapur, or, you know, when I come to the temple, but how am I going to think about Krishna while I'm washing the dishes, while I'm driving to work, while I'm doing the accounts? You know, how am I going to think about Krishna? Transcendental absorption may seem very difficult. The next thing that we're going to look at is something that I used to believe was no longer a problem in the Hare Krishna movement, but I keep getting reminded that it is a problem. In fact, just yesterday I was getting some emails from a GBC saying, you know, this is continuing to be a problem. And that is that we see two things. We see, okay, here's my Krishna consciousness, and here's my material life. Here's my constitutional activities, and here's my conditional activities. And when I'm at the temple, or when I'm taking care of my deities, when I'm chanting, then I'm doing Krishna consciousness, and the rest of the time, it's all just material. So we don't see our whole life as service. We don't see our life holistically. Then the third thing we're going to look at are pressures to do things that are not conducive to Krishna consciousness. The fourth thing we're going to look at is time management. Feeling that we don't have enough time, you know, we're scheduling, it's not so good, our prioritizing and so forth. So we're going to look at each of these one after another. So the first thing we're going to look at is absorption in the transcendental. And here, so the problems here is that part of our lives, I can control it from here. Yes. No, I don't want you to use the microphone. It's just the way it is. For Tuesday, we'll set it up. For Nisinga Dev's, is that just doing it by itself? Why is that doing it? It just like regulates it by itself? Is this like a really smart screen?
No.
Or did you do that? Can I do it? Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm doing it by myself. I say maybe it's like really developed artificial intelligence. Sorry. Okay, so one thing is we have a hard time seeing Krishna in the material world. We feel there's some separation between Krishna and material things that are ordinary life activities. And then seeing our life as service. So we may think, well, if I'm really renounced and I'm actually detached, that means I'm going to be very hard-hearted. You know, I'm going to be callous. I'm just not going to care about anything. That's what real renunciation is. And we may neglect our family members' emotional needs. We may neglect our own emotional, social, and physical needs. And these needs may then reassert themselves and cause us all kinds of difficulty. These are the problems that I've seen. Then pressure for things that are opposed to spiritual life. So we can have this kind of pressure from our co-workers, we can have this kind of pressure from non-devoted family members, we can have this kind of pressure from other students, if we're a student, we can also have this kind of pressure from ourselves. So if before taking a Krishna consciousness we had bad habits, we may be the one pressuring ourselves to get involved in bad habits. I told you they're fine. It's just fine. Children can be children. It's fine. Just think of how adorable Krishna must be as a child. If these children are so, these are just little jivas. And then in the scheduling and prioritizing section, staying up late at night, maybe to write papers, to get work done, or just bad habits, having to leave for work very early. As I said, some people have jobs, you have to leave at 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning. So many demands of the home, the pipes are breaking, this problem, the door's falling off the hinges. Spending time with the children, spending time with the family, ourselves wasting time with material entertainment, and then having little time left over for our sadhana. And our life might feel like this. All right, so we're going to look at some solutions. Is becoming absorbed in the transcendental. How can we always remember Krishna and never forget him, really, all day long? So we have our philosophical basis for this is given in Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know what verse number this is? I already gave you the answer for you. So this is such a nice verse because it talks about that everything merges in transcendence. The person, the consumption which is offered, everything becomes transcendental. If we have the right consciousness, everything we do becomes part of our Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada says something wonderful here in this purport. He says, matter dovetails for the cause of the absolute truth regains its spiritual quality. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory conscious into Brahman or the Supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, it is said to be in samadhi or trance. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna or sacrifice for the absolute. So let's think about what Prabhupada is saying here. He's saying if you're in the proper consciousness, which is ultimately samadhi, then anything you do in that process of samadhi is a yajna. Everything you do in that consciousness of samadhi is connection with the divine. Now, when we think of samadhi, what do we think about? Do we think like Shamakabishi in the hut? When Maharaj Bhrigu came, you all know that story? Maharaj Bhrigu comes and Shamakarishi is in samadhi, and so he doesn't hear or see Maharaj Bhrigu. And the same thing happens with Lord Shiva at the Daksha Yajna. Lord Shiva doesn't perceive the entrance of Daksha. Is that what we mean by samadhi? So let's look here at Bhagavad Gita 12.2 purport. This is one of my favorites. A pure devotee is constantly engaged. Sometimes he chants, Sometimes he hears or reads books about Krishna, or sometimes he cooks prasada, or goes to the marketplace to purchase something for Krishna, or sometimes he washes the temple or the dishes. Whatever he does not let a single moment pass without devoting these activities to Krishna. Such action is in full samadhi. What should we all be talking about? So some of you were just washing the Vyasa Sun, right? So were you in the kind of samadhi like Shamakarishi while you were washing the Vyasa Sun? Were you like... And Prabhupada talks about you're going to the marketplace, right? Going to the marketplace. Well, that means you'd have to walk or you'd have to drive. Could you imagine driving in a yogic samadhi? More dangerous than driving while texting. It's hard to have a category of that, you know? Maybe a kind of ticket you could get. Driving while under the influence of samadhi. So what is Prabhupada mean by this? Now, if you're familiar with Astanga Yoga, you know there's steps leading to samadhi, yes? So first there's yama and niyama. You have to live a proper life, otherwise you won't be able to do the next steps. You sit in a certain way, you breathe in a certain way. You sit in a certain way and breathe in a certain way because the human body is designed so that if you deal with it in a certain way, mechanically it tends to go into a trance. And then once you put your body in a relaxed and alert state, then it's dharana. What does dharana mean? What does dhara mean? What's dhara? Anyone know what dhara is?
To bear.
To bear, very good, to hold. Dada is another name for the earth, who is holding us all up, generally, unless she gets angry and has an earthquake or something. I don't know why you really say there's the goddess Pele who's spewing her fire into everyone. But generally, the earth is holding us up. So Dada means to hold. And in Astanga Yoga, Dada means you're holding the mind. Holding the mind, holding it still. So the mind, what expansion of Vishnu is the deity of the mind? Prajuna is the deity of the intelligence. Aniruddha. And what mode of nature does the mind come from? Goodness. Did you ever think about that? Did you ever read that and say, goodness, my mind? Why would someone be talking about somebody else's mind? You know? These sages, I don't know, they didn't know what was going on in my mind. But the mind is a product of the mode of goodness, which means that mode of goodness is the default value of the mind. If you don't install any other software, if you don't install your own software, the mind's going to be in the mode of goodness. So dharana means you hold the mind in its default position. Now, of course, the way that we are taught in Bhakti Yoga is that you hold the mind in its default position with a mantra. Of course, in other Judaic and Buddhist traditions, some of them just try to hold the mind in a default position by focusing on the breath. Of course, they don't know that Krishna says, I am the breath going in and out. So they may think we're focusing on nothing, but they're actually focusing on Krishna. But don't tell them that. They might become disturbed. But so we try to hold the mind by focus on the Lord, by focus on mantra. Now, what happens when you hold the mind is that at a certain point, the mind just starts to flow naturally in the direction that you're holding. And that's called dhyana. So dhyana is your mind goes in an effortless flow. Dharana, there's some effort, yes? It's implied by the word dharana that there's some effort. Of course, it should be a very soft effort. As I'm sure we've all experienced, if we try to hold the mind like this, it doesn't work very well. How many of you have children? How many of you are parents? Okay. So when your children are very small, if you try to hold them very forcefully, is that effective? What happens if you try to hold them very forcefully, very strongly?
Start crying.
They start crying and they rebel, yes? But here you see this gentleman, he's holding his child very softly. And the child is just sitting there. So one should hold the mind softly. Some examples are given, like if you're holding a bird. So if you're holding a bird, you don't want to squish the bird. You don't want it to get away, but you don't want to squish it. Of course, I don't hold very many birds, so I like to think about flowers, because I'm often holding flowers. So you're holding flowers. Sometimes, you know, the pushpanjali, they give you the flowers at the beginning, right? And then the pushpanjali goes on. And the whole time you have to hold your flower petals very carefully, because otherwise, by the time it comes to Asia Pushpanjali, they're all squished and yucky, right? Yes, you have this experience. Sometimes you look at your hands like, oh, I can't even offer these flowers anymore. So you want to hold your hand, your mind, just like you're holding some flowers, and then eventually it just starts to flow. Now, this is very important. Please listen very carefully. So what a lot of us think of as samadhi is really dhyana, where the mind is just flowing. But what happens after that is something a little different. What does sama mean?
Same.
Same. And what does deep mean? Like deep? Thoughts, meditation. So what happens when the mind just naturally flows is that we get realization. What is the realization that one gets? One gets a realization. One gets realization that all living entities are spirit and that God is everywhere. This is the sama that one gets. So in Astanga Yoga, you are coming to that realization through mechanically controlling the mind until it flows, and when it flows, it becomes receptive to truth. Just like Krishna says, for one who's controlled the mind, what has already reached?
Supersoul.
When you put your mind in the state, the supersoul, the lord of the heart, becomes manifest. So the Astanga yogis, when they reach this point of realization, they just stay in this trance, and they're relishing it. Right? Because you also have the mentioning of the stage of prajñāhara, where you withdraw the senses from the external objects. The attainment of samadhi in bhakti yoga is a little different. And you can attain samadhi in bhakti yoga through all of this process. We have examples in the Bhagavatam, say Dhruva Maharaj and others, who went through that meditative process in bhakti yoga. So it's not contradictory to bhakti yoga. But in bhakti yoga we do this a little differently. So just like, is that your child? No. Interesting. Okay, as soon as I asked him that, then immediately he turns around and he becomes attentive. Oh, is that my child? Why is that? Because guess what he's holding in his mind? What is he holding in his mind? His child. Does this make sense to everybody? You're not only holding your child in your lap, right? This lady here. You're not only holding your child in your lap, you're holding your child in your mind. Correct? Yes? So now we're just going to... I'm sorry, this is something that you guys will luck out on in this life. So you ladies who've been pregnant, were you always holding your child in your mind when you were pregnant? Yes? Could you forget your child? No. Pregnant lady never forgets her child. That's the kind of holding that we want to do in bhakti. We want to do the holding in the mind because of attachment, not because of mechanics. In this age, trying to hold your mind mechanically is very hard. I'm sure we've all tried that. Have we all tried to hold our mind mechanically? Does it work very much? No. I mean, it can work if you're really, 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 really determined. And even then, it may not. But it's very easy for us to hold our mind in attachment. We all do it. We all do it. Correct? Has everyone here been attached to something or somebody in their life?
Yes.
So you've held your mind with your child, with your spouse, with your parents, with your job, with your upcoming vacation, with the bills you have to pay when you get home because you took the weekend to go to Vrindavan. You know, we're holding our mind with whatever our attachment is. And we don't have to make an effort to hold our mind there for very long. As soon as we hold our mind there for a little while, it naturally starts flowing towards our attachment. The problem is that when our mind flows towards our attachments in this world, we do not attain a state of samadhi. We attain a state of duality. That rhymes, samadhi, duality. You should make a little poem for that. So when we're holding a material attachment, we become filled with sojati, kanchati, we become filled with hankering and lamenting, and we see things as good or bad. And we try to grasp the good and push away the bad. We get our absorption gets pulled into this world, as Krishna nicely explains in Bhagavad Gita 262 and 263. But the basic process of contemplating something in attachment is the basic process of Bhakti Yoga. Now that kind of samadhi is something that you can do while you are active. It is not the kind of samadhi we require to just sit in one place and breathe a certain way, because all of us are able to come to that point of focus of the mind even while we are active. We are able to focus on anything in this world while we are active. If what I'm focusing on, this is so important and it's so amazing and it's so wonderful and it's just, I don't know, I just love it so much. It's hard for me to contain my excitement about it. That when you focus on the transcendent, even walking around doing things, you enter into samadhi. You enter into spiritual realization. You see the world differently. You experience the world differently. You experience the world from a transcendent position rather than a dualistic position, even though you appear to be doing so many things. And so therefore Srila Prabhupada says this in Bhagavad Gita 18.9. A man working in Krishna consciousness in a factory does not associate himself with the work of the factory, nor with the workers of the factory. He simply works for Krishna. And when he gives up the results for Krishna, he is acting transcendentally. Who can imagine being in samadhi in a factory? I mean, it seems to be completely incompatible. But Prabhupada is giving these examples. All right, so how can we become absorbed? So we're going to look at several different ways of absorption. And we're going to go from easier to harder to harder to harder. So this is the easiest way. The easiest way to become absorbed in Krishna in the world is to become absorbed in Krishna as the world. Okay, if I want to become absorbed in Krishna in the world, I need to become absorbed in Krishna as he is in the world. So where does Krishna tell us in the Bhagavad Gita of how he manifests in the world? Which chapters?
Ten.
Where else?
Seven.
Where else?
Nine.
Where else?
11.
Can someone give me a Bhagavad Gita?
15.
Yes. So let's get a Bhagavad Gita again. Thank you very much, sir. Okay. So let's just find some of these. Do you want a Bhagavad Gita too? Even if you already have one at home, you can give one to a friend. Very good. All right. Actually, young man, we are going to ask everybody here today to get a Bhagavad Gita, and if they don't have one at home, we're asking them to get one and give it to a friend and co-worker. And here we have our first customer of the day. Alright, so Krishna says here in the seventh chapter, and the taste of water. And the taste of water. Prabhupada one time said that you can tell the alcoholic to meditate on Krishna as the taste of his liquor. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Prabhupada's pretty amazing. He said someday if he does that, he'll become a saintly person. Yeah, wow. So what's our excuse? So we're drinking water, we can meditate. Oh, Krishna's the taste of this water. Actually, the word rasa is interesting. Rasa comes. Rasa means generally liquid taste. Do you know that any pleasure we get from the senses has to involve some sort of liquidity? One time on an airplane, I got dry eye. You know, if we don't have moisture in our eye, we can't really enjoy seeing. My eye just became painful. If there's no lubrication in the ear, you can't hear. You know, your skin's all dried out, you can't feel anything nicely. You notice that all the senses have some sort of liquid? So Krishna is what provides that taste. You know, when I was a kid in elementary school, we did an experiment. We took paper towels and dried off our tongue. And then with a dry tongue, we put like salt and sugar on our tongue. But you couldn't taste it. Now, he shouldn't put that on the floor. He's ever traumatized. So without this rasa, without this liquid, there's no enjoyment. Then he says he's the light of the sun and the moon. The sounding ether, the ability of man. So we all have ability, yes? With our ability, we're sitting. With our ability, we're hearing. With our ability, we're seeing. That ability is Krishna. Let's just become aware of that for a moment. Can we become aware of that? My ability to sit here? Krishna says that is me. What else does he say in this chapter? I am the heat in fire. Right? Is there some heat in this room?
Yes.
Yes. Is there some heat in our body?
Yes.
Can we turn our awareness to that for a moment? To become aware that there's heat in this room. So Krishna says, I am that heat. Can you put your attention to that for a moment? Try to think about how Krishna is the heat. Right? What does heat communicate to us? Generally, heat communicates to us that there's life. Something that's alive, it has warmth. Also, we associate warmth with love. Okay, let's look at the 9th chapter. That was from the 7th chapter. I withhold and send forth the rain. And when it's raining, we think, oh, there's Krishna raining. When it's not raining, there's Krishna not. Here again, I give heat. The father, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. We gave a class here, I think a few years ago, on Mother's Day about how Krishna says he's the mother. So we don't have time to go into that in depth. That we appreciate the qualities of a mother or father, and when we're acting as a mother or father, say, oh, ultimately that is Krishna. The refuge, right? The shelter. Just like here, we're in a shelter. In our home, we're in a shelter. Whenever we come to a shelter, oh, that is Krishna. Okay, let's go on to chapter 10. That is Krishna's saying, chapter 10. Everything. Of the stars, I am the moon. When we see the moon, we think, ah, there is Krishna. Of bodies of water, I am the ocean. Of weapons, I am the thunderbolt. When there's a storm, we see lightning in the sky. Of causes for procreation, I am the god of love. Even when we see, oh, there are some people in love with each other. We say, oh, that's Krishna. It's meant to have nice children. Among beasts, I am the lion. Among subduers, I am time. Whenever we look at our watch, they say the young people today don't have watches. They just look at their phones. And what is the time? And the beginning, the middle, and the end. Among logicians, I am the conclusive truth. The purifiers, I am the wind. We're accessing all of these every day, isn't it? Let's look at chapter 15. Fire of digestion. We eat generally, right? Most days we eat. The fire of digestion. I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest. That's why I told you these guys meditating on their air. They're meditating on their breath. They're actually meditating on Krishna. I'm seated in everyone's heart. For me come knowledge and remembrance and forgetfulness. When what's really helpful, you just pick up the Bhagavad Gita once a day and open up in one of those chapters and say, I'm going to meditate on this today. He says, I'm the light of all luminous objects. That means even your phone, your computer screen. You know, look at the light. There's light coming from the screen. Oh, that light is Krishna. The light comes from Krishna. My ability is Krishna. Right, so we're looking at here the heat and fire, and here's the heat and fire. He says it's flower bearing spring, the ability in men, purifiers, he is the wind, taste, the light of the moon, the light of the sun. And this way our vision becomes full with Krishna. Now having this kind of meditation is essential for the beginners of spiritual life. Because we are already absorbed in the things of this world, yes? That's already our absorption. So our process is not, okay, we're all going to go in a cave in the Himalayas and not even see anything in this world. Our process is, I'm seeing and tasting and hearing and touching the things of this world. Let me understand how they're actually Krishna. Then when I interact with them, I'll understand that I'm interacting with Krishna. Does that take some effort? Yes. That's the dharana. It takes some effort to hold your mind there, or to bring your mind back there. But after you make some effort for some time, what comes after dharana is? Dhyana. Do you have to make an effort eternally? Do you think, oh, this is so hard, I have to make an effort eternally? No. After some time, the mind will naturally flow there. You understand? And once the mind starts naturally flowing, then you come into a state of samadhi where you have realization that everyone is spiritual and that Krishna is everywhere. Alright, so this is our other method, of course, of remembering Krishna in all circumstances. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So, in so many times and places, we can be chanting Hare Krishna. Maybe you can't chant Hare Krishna out loud when you're in a board meeting. But then you can meditate on how Krishna is ability, and how Krishna is the light of the sun, how Krishna is the life air, and so many things. But the times when you can chant Hare Krishna, then chant Hare Krishna. And chanting Hare Krishna should be a meditation. Prabhupada says when we chant Hare Krishna, we should feel the presence of Krishna. And as soon as we feel the presence of Krishna, we remember his talks with Arjuna, we remember how he's killing the demons and the coward boys are encouraging him with claps. And Prabhupada says, if we can't do that, we can just hear the sound of the Hare Krishna mantra. So again, this is a kind of meditation where we're holding the mind in the sound of Krishna's name and Krishna's activities. Then, of course, we can remember Krishna's form. And one of the main reasons that we engage in deity worship is so we can remember Krishna's form. So how many of you have deities in your home? How many of you have deities in your home do some kind of worship for them every day? Something for them every day. So when we do something for our deities every day, one of the things we're supposed to be doing is meditating on the form of the deity. So don't make it just ritualistic. You know, don't make it okay, I'm in a hurry, I've got to go to work, and here's my food, I'm just going to stick in front of the altar and ring a bell. And pay attention to the person to whom you're offering. Do you understand? You know, if some guests came to your home, even if you were rushed, I'm sure that you would have some attention to the guest, yes? So you give Krishna as the master of the home. You want to give him some attention. So when you're offering your food, or if you're offering incense, or whatever you're doing regularly for your deities, you should be focusing on the form of your deities so that any time during the day, you can remember the form of the deity whom you worship. And that's also one of the main purposes of having these gorgeous temples at so much expense and difficulty to maintain these temples. It's not a small thing. And why are we doing this? So one purpose is that we can serve the deities here and remember the form of the deities. We should be able at any moment, we should be able to bring to mind the form of the deity whom we worship. Can we do that? Can we all try that right now? Can you try to bring to your mind the form, whatever form you like particularly? Can you all do that? Maybe we have a painting that we particularly like. We should have some form of Krishna. And I think we're so fortunate today with modern technology. You know, you can have a picture of Krishna on your phone, right? A picture of Krishna on your computer screen and so many things. But the purpose, again, is not just to have pictures and deities, not that they just fade into the background. You understand what I'm saying? Not that my house is full of pictures of Krishna and I have an altar, but I'm not really paying any attention. But I should be able to meditate on the form of the Lord. Then I want to be able to meditate on the pastimes of the Lord. And I want to have the things in this world and in my life remind me of the pastimes of the Lord. So if you see someone who's pregnant, you can think, oh, the Lord went into Ujjala's womb and saved Maharaj Parikit. And we see all these children around here. And you can think of, oh, just like Mother Yasoda. She's loving her child so much. Mother Rohini, she's loving her child so much. Not even before the class, I was seeing people playing with the children. I thought, wow, Krishna is a child. You know, some of the children were kind of playing and fighting over the Mridanga. And I was thinking, you know, Krishna has his childhood friends. And Krishna's eternally a little child. Even difficulties in the world. You can remember how Draupadi went through so many difficulties. You know, you hear something terrible in the news. Somebody's been insulted or offended, and you can think, ah, just like Jodi was offended. Like the Pandavas were offended. To somehow or other, we may have the things in the world remind us of Krishna's presence. All right, so that was the first one, being absorbed, that we can be absorbed in the Supreme by meditating how Krishna is in the world, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, and having the things of this world remind us of the Lord's pastimes and Krishna's form. So we're going to go now to seeing our life as service. So we may think that this is only true for those who live in the temple, those who live in an ashram. They can see their life as service. How am I going to see my life as service? So here in Bhagavad Gita 5.2, Prabhupada writes, as long as the heart is not purified, one has to work on the fruitive platform. But action in Krishna consciousness automatically helps one escape the result of fruitive action so that one need not descend to the material platform. Therefore, action in Krishna consciousness is always superior to renunciation, which entails a risk of falling. Prabhupada said, it's better if you don't renounce the world. And we have seen practically, we don't like to say this, but it needs to be said, we have seen practically in our Hare Krishna movement that the renunciates as a whole do not do as well. We have to be frank about this. That the people who try to renounce the world over the long haul, they don't do as well as the people who work in the world for Krishna. It's a much safer position. Prabhupada says here, it's always superior. Isn't that interesting? It's always superior. It's much safer. So there's a mood. One of my favorites from Bhaktivinoda songs. If you really want to get in the mood of how do I work in the world as service, how do I see everything in my life as service, I would strongly suggest that you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs from Sharanagati. He has a series of songs on the six processes of surrender. And in many of the songs, he relates the process of surrender to to working in the world. After all, Bhakti Vinod was married. He had, I think, 10 children, yes? And he was a judge. He was a busy person in the world. And Prabhupada said his children all turned out very well because he was a responsible father. It wasn't just that he had the children and was busy doing something else and not taking care of them. So this is one of his very nice prayers. Can we read this together? Can we read this together? Oh Lord, nothing further remains that may be called mine, declaring that my wealth, family members, home, and wife are truly yours. I continue as a mere servant to dutifully protect them. For the purpose of your service, I will earn money and bear the expense of maintaining your household. Is that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? Many years ago, in the Sankirtan newsletter, one sannyasi had written some. This is a long time ago. Oh my God, how many years ago is this? Almost 40 years ago. This sannyasi had written in the Sankirtan newsletter that whenever we go to a class, we should try to find something that we can apply to our own life. And I got very inspired. I said, I'm going to do that tomorrow morning. So I went to class the next day, and the temple commander was giving the class. This was in the old New York temple, 55th Street. There were probably well over 300 people in the temple. And the temple commander was giving the class, and the whole class was saying, the way to be Krishna conscious is to surrender to your immediate authority in the temple. He was a temple commander. So I'm sitting in the class, and I had, at that time, I guess my son was about 3, and I was pregnant. And I thought, I don't really have any immediate authority in the temple. So I'm sitting in the class, really bored, and just thinking, this class has nothing to do with me. And then I remembered I had read in the Sankirtan newsletter that I should try to find something in the class for myself. I said, okay, let me try. I said, Krishna, what in this class applies to me? And all of a sudden, I realized, my home is a temple. I thought, oh, my home is a temple. My husband is a temple president, and I'm the temple commander. It was a life-changing experience. I never saw my family the same way after that. I thought, we're running a temple, we're running an ashram. Our children are, you know, ashram residents. It was a very different view, and I call this the secret agent principle. You know, when you stop thinking, I'm somebody's husband, I'm somebody's wife, I'm somebody's son, somebody's daughter, somebody's mother, somebody's father, I'm a banker, I'm an accountant, I'm an IT professional. I don't want to ask how many of you are IT professionals. So, you know, we start thinking like that and start thinking, actually, I'm Krishna's secret agent. Jivarasarabhaya Krishna Nichidasa. I am a servant of Krishna. And what I'm doing externally is just that. It's something external. It's my cover. You know, secret agents have a cover, right? You know what that means? Like, you don't go to Russia or North Korea or something, you know? You don't go to North Korea and say, I'm an American spy! You say, I'm an English teacher. You know, I'm an IT specialist. But really, you're there to spy for your country. You understand? Everybody understands this? Now, you have to be a good English teacher or a good IT specialist. But you're not trying to be a good English teacher. You're trying to be a good spy. We should stop trying to be a good husband, good wife, good son, good daughter, good mother, good father, good banker, good this, good that, and just try to be Krishna's agent. So, if you're Krishna's agent, what are you going to do? What's Krishna's mission? What's his mission?
Bring all the children back, please.
Yes, he wants to take everybody home. He wants to distribute love, right? So if I'm really Krishna's agent, what I'm going to do is distribute love. I'm going to distribute love of God to my husband, my wife, my children. That's what I'm going to be doing. And if you can do this one thing, this is all you remember from today's class. This is a life-changing thing. And you can say, well, but the only reason that I'm in this situation is my material desires. If I was really, really Krishna conscious, I wouldn't be in this situation. I don't know. Lord Chaitanya doesn't agree with that. What does he say here? He says, if you all adopt the renounced order and lose interest in dealing with pounds, shilling, and pence, I'm sure you can actually say pounds, shilling, and pence. Who will take charge of maintaining your large family? Whether you involve the material activities or become completely renounced, you five brothers or all my eternal servants, birth after birth. Lord Chaitanya says here, this is in the story of Gopinath Patanayaka, Lord Chaitanya is saying here that he wants devotees working in the world. If we want Mahaprabhu's movement to spread all over the world, does that mean everybody becomes a renunciate? What do you think? Will that work? Would we like it if we had a devotee president? No matter what you think of the current president. Would it be nicer if he was a devotee?
Of course.
I think so. Would we like devotee leaders of all the countries of the world? Yes? Would we like a devotee running Monsanto? Would you like that?
Yeah.
Like a devotee running Walmart?
Sure.
Yeah. What about all the hospitals? Would we like devotees running those? All the schools? Yes. Well, guess what? That means devotees have to be running these things. What an amazing idea. And that would mean they have to run them as devotees. Which means they have to run it as a secret agent and say, this is my service. My husband, my wife, my home, my mother, my father, my children, they're not my shelter. They're not my shelter. They're not my source of sense gratification. They're not my shelter. They're not my source of sense gratification. I'm not their shelter. They are my service. They are my what?
Service.
They are my service. Bhaktisiddhanta said, we should always remember that we're always a servant of Krishna. Whether we're doing material activity, with pounds, sugar, pets, or in the renounced order, I am simply Krishna's servant. Then everything that we do is service. Taking sannyas and dealing with pounds, shilling, pets are external affairs. This is the key, my dear friends. This is the key. It's a key. It's a key. If you get this thing, your whole life changes. This is another way to be in samadhi. Such an easy, natural, simple way. What does it say? In any condition, one should... Why don't we do this together? In any condition, one should always consider how to please and satisfy Krishna. Very simple. Very, very simple thing. Very, very simple. So I give this example when I was teaching Manushriksha. So I could be talking to you, but I might not care about you. I might really be trying to impress you. Have you all done that? You're dealing with one person trying to impress somebody else. Have you done that? Yes, everybody's done. Okay. Sometimes we do this with Krishna. I'm worshiping Krishna. See? I'm worshiping Krishna. Are you all watching? I'm so devoted. See how I'm chanting my rounds? Are you watching? Reverse it. Just reverse it. Deal with humans. Instead of dealing with Krishna to impress humans, deal with humans to impress Krishna. Deal with humans, deal with things to impress Krishna. Is Krishna always watching? So you can imagine he's watching, because he is watching. I like to imagine that he's kind of like sitting there, you know, going, how are you going to deal with this person? Okay. I'm going to try to make you smile with the way I deal with them, all right? That's what it should be. Am I taking care of my child, my spouse, my parents, my friends, my employer, my employees, whatever, so that Krishna will smile? And if you want to know how to make Krishna smile, Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, text 13 to 20. So Prabhupada goes on to say, thus even if one is involved in great material affairs, he will not become attached. As soon as one forgets that he is eternal servant of Krishna, he becomes involved in material activities. As soon as we have this mentality, I am Krishna's secret agent, we're not attached. Going on in the same purport, he says, if one is always conscious, Krishna is the supreme master, that he is the eternal servant of Krishna, he's a liberated person. And you'll feel that. You'll actually experience this samadhi. You'll experience it if you're just trying to satisfy Krishna. And not trying to be anybody's shelter, not trying to have them be your shelter, not thinking they're your source of enjoyment. Everybody else is your
service.
And who are you trying to please? Krishna. Okay, here's another favorite of mine. This is a letter that Srila Prabhupada wrote to Jayapataka Swami. Why don't we read this together? The secret of surrendering to Krishna is that such surrendered devotee sees that everything is part of Krishna's plan. Whatever is meant to be, I am doing. Let me do it with my full attention to every detail. Let me become absorbed in such service, never mind what it is. Let all other considerations be forgotten, and only my desire to do the best for Krishna's alone pleasure is my motive. This is so deep. We could talk for 1 month about this one paragraph, and we still wouldn't get to all of it. Krishna's alone pleasure. I'm not trying to please my wife, my husband, my boss separately from Krishna. Does that work? Have any of you perfectly been able to please another living entity separately from Krishna? Does it work? No, it doesn't work. Disappointing, isn't it? You try so hard. I'm really going to please my father. You know, I'm really going to do it. He's like, nee, 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 nee. Next time, I'll do it better. I was talking with one gentleman the other day to say, you know, I realized that, you know, he said, I was reading this book about how to be a good husband, and I realized that most of the things I do to please my wife, she doesn't actually even care about. Said, it says here in this book, women don't even care about those things, and those are all the things I've been doing. Said, I've been wondering why I work so hard to please her, and she's still not happy. He said, so in this book, it says if I do this and this and this, then she'll be happy. So I did it, and she was happier. I said, okay, happier. Was she, like, totally happy? He said, well, no, but I'm going to try to do better at it. He said, stop trying to please your wife. Start trying to please Krishna. Your wife may be happy with you at 10 in the morning and not happy with you at 10:30 in the morning. And not only women are like that, men are like that too. You know, it's just how it is. But you can always please Krishna, isn't it? Now, if you're trying to please Krishna, you will be a good husband and a good wife and a good father and a good everything. You'll actually be a much better one of them because you won't be upset when the other person's not pleasing you. When we're trying to be a good wife and our husband says, why did you make this 3 days in a row? What's wrong with you? Then we're crushed. We're like, I'm not a good one. When I'm trying to please Krishna, I thought, you know, Krishna, my intention in making, you know, lasagna 3 days in a row was that I knew my husband likes lasagna and I just thought he would be pleased if I did this for him. So I hope you're smiling at me even though he's yelling at me. And that principle, Krishna's alone. And Prabhupada also says here, everything is part of Krishna's plan. Whatever is meant to be, I am doing. That sounds so new agey, doesn't it? You are doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. But it's true. Now, it's true for the materialists because they're acting according to karma. It's true for us. If we're actually serving Krishna, then Krishna is in control of our lives. And whatever is meant to be, that I am doing. To let it go, I have to try to control everything. And then it says, to do it with attention to every detail, to be absorbed in that service. And to do it the best we can. Never mind what it is. Now we should try to have some service that's in accord with our nature, because that's Krishna's instructions. So this instruction is not denying that other instruction. But the point is, whatever I'm given to do at the moment, no matter how apparently insignificant or significant it is, we tend to think, let me give my attention and try to do my best on the important things, and the unimportant things, I'll just kind of rush through them, they're just material. But everything that we're doing, we should be doing with attention to please Krishna, even if it's not such an important thing from a material perspective. Always is Krishna smiling at the way I'm taking care of the cleanliness of the place that I'm in, for example. And how do we really judge what's important and what's not important? How do we know? Maybe it's two sentences we say to one person that's the most important thing we do in our whole life. I'm sure many of you, or most of you, saw Steve Jobs had that. It was a video of him speaking at a graduation ceremony. Yes, many of you have seen that? And he talked about how when he was a hungry student, he would get prasadam from the Hare Krishna temple. I think it was very famous. Millions and millions and millions of years. So many millions of people saw Steve Jobs talking about how grateful he was to the Hare Krishna devotees for giving him food. Now, do you think that the devotee who served Steve Jobs' prasadam had any concept that what he or she was doing was significant? What do you think? It's just some poor college student coming to the temple and giving him a plate of prasadam. But I don't think it was just the prasadam. I'm sure it was also the mood in the temple. I'm sure it was also the mood of the people who served him. And how many millions and millions of people were influenced by those devotees who cooked and served the prasadam. But they might not have seen it as something very important. They might have seen, here's just some other guest at the temple and giving them plate. Now suppose they had that motivation. So somebody took that as very important. Okay, next area we're going to go to is living a pure life, keeping away from things which degrade us in our Krishna consciousness. So of course we know that the ultimate solution for having a taste for materialistic things is to get a taste for spiritual things. Here's the upside down tree, right? Everything that exists in the spiritual world has its reflection here. So if we want to get free of attachment to the reflection, we become attached to the reality. And you can say, but I'm working on that. The question is whether we're working on that emotionally and with our desires. Bhakti is not a mechanical process. Even something like a dhyan yoga or jnana yoga, which are more mechanical than bhakti, are not purely mechanical. Without some touch of bhakti, even they don't work. So what to speak of bhakti itself? Bhakti itself is not a mechanical process. It's about a re-establishing a relationship of love. So we want to become attached to Krishna, which means our reading, our chanting, all of our activities have to be done not mechanically or materialistically. And then we develop some attachment for reality. And this is the ultimate cure. In fact, we shouldn't be just trying to repress or suppress or be detached from the material things. Rather, we should be working primarily at being attached to Krishna. Just trying to be detached from the material generally does not work. In fact, what happens is we start becoming absorbed in what we're trying to give up. You understand? Like if I say to all of you, okay, you can think about anything except for elephants. What happens? So this is exactly what happens if people say, you know, I'm not going to eat that cake, I'm not going to eat that cake, I'm not going to eat that cake, I'm not going to... They eat the cake. Yes? We saw this in our movement years ago. You know, these sannyasis were just, those women. They had one of their own. So we want to be very, very careful that we don't just try to push away our material attachments. We become attached to Krishna. And we will find that the material attachments gradually go away on their own. Generally, most of them. All right, let's look at some other very specific and helpful things we can do. Prabhupada writes in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 247, as far as prescribed duties are concerned, they can be fitted into three subdivisions, namely routine work, emergency work, and desired activities. So our routine work should be, according to Krishna, in the 3rd and 18th chapter, according to our nature. So even our routine work should be things that we enjoy. Emergency work should be for emergencies. What a novel idea. So if our life is full of emergency work, we have some serious life management problems. And then also Prabhupada saying desired activities. Do things for Krishna that you like to do. This is a running theme in Prabhupada's books. He talks about engaging in the 9 processes according to our desire. Okay, we have our basic 16 rounds, reading the Bhagavatam, worshiping the deity. But then over and beyond that, we should be doing things that we like to do. Do you like to make garlands for Krishna? Do that. Do you like to write poetry for Krishna? Do that. Do you like to organize festivals for Krishna? Do that. Find something that you like to do for Krishna and do that as a hobby. Then Krishna says in the 6th chapter that we should be regulated in eating, sleeping, recreation, and work. He mentions recreation. One of the biggest problems we have in modern society is the nature of what most of us do for recreation. What most of us do for recreation is sit ourselves in front of some bright, glowing screen and watch something that we know is a stupid, useless waste of time. Yes? So have some recreation that is also part of your spiritual life. Prabhupada would say that when he wanted to do recreation, what did Prabhupada do for recreation? Anybody?
Morning walk?
No, it was for exercise. He would sing bhajans. He said, when I don't have anything to do and I want some relaxation time, I take out the harmonium and the mandalya and sing bhajans. So have some spiritual recreation that you can do. What you can also do, but I don't think I mentioned it here, is you can also do some gradual decrease. So there's a friend of mine that came to me and said, I'm really having a problem with mundane recreation. She said, I'll start watching a TV show and pretty soon she called it binge watching, and she said, I'm just watching, you know, like 10 hours a day and it's taking over my life. What should I do? And I thought, well, if I tell her to give everything up, she said, I'll do whatever you say. That's, you know, that's a big responsibility whenever somebody says that. I'll do whatever you say. And I know she means it. She said it before and meant it. So I took it as a very grave responsibility. And I thought, well, if I tell her to just stop watching all nonsense, she probably won't be able to do it. Her mind will rebel. I said, all right, can you limit it to 3 hours a week and time it? She said, yeah, I think I can do it. I said, in those 3 hours, only watch things that have some value. I said, don't watch things that are just utterly rubbish. And I said, I'm not going to tell you it has value. You're, you know, grown up, you can figure it out. But if it doesn't have some value, don't watch it at all, and you can watch things of value 3 hours a week. So she got back to me after a month. She said, this is working great. And she said, what I'm doing now in my spare time is reading Prabhupada's books and the books of the Acharyas. She just contacted me recently. This was about a year ago when she came to this problem. She just contacted me recently. She said, I would like you to know the problem is now completely gone. So sometimes there may be some, you know, gradual system. Okay, so my suggestion is to have a life full with the association of devotees. And we're so fortunate with modern technology, you can do that even virtually. I was once visiting the home of some devotees in Queens, New York. And the husband there went every morning to Mangal Arati in Mayapur, India. Oh, what was really funny is I said to him, have you ever been to Mayapur, actually, physically? And he said, no. So I thought that was very interesting. So every morning he goes to Mangal Arati in Mayapur from Queens, New York. And I know many devotees do this. In fact, there was one point in my life when I was in graduate school where I went to 3 morning programs. One at my local temple, one in Alachua, and one in Los Angeles. You know, so I was going virtually on the computer. If you're in a situation where you have a job where you're really expected to do sinful things, you know, if somehow it's your job, you're expected to go out drinking or something like that, make some excuse. Say, you know, I'm allergic to this, or I have some health reasons, or I have this schedule, and I'm sorry, you know, I just can't do it. And if your occupation really involves sinful activities, then, my dear friends, choose another occupation. Does that require some faith? Yes, it does. And we have this wonderful quote. This is in the story of Magari the Hunter. The source of our income is not actually the source of our maintenance. Every living being, from the great Brahma down to an insignificant ant, is being maintained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Eka bhavanam yo vidyatikam. The one supreme being, Krishna, maintains everyone. Our so-called source of income is our own choice only. Prabhupada says further in that purport, if you want to maintain yourself by hunting, then Krishna will maintain you through hunting, and if you want to maintain yourself as a Brahmana, Krishna will maintain you through brahminical activities. So if somehow or other we're in a situation where our job is intricately involved with sinful activities, find another job. So I knew a devotee who was very wealthy by advertising cigarettes. And I said, you've got to change your job. She didn't listen to me, but I said, you've got to change your job. You can't be peddling disease and death. You can't be manipulating people psychologically through advertisements to take up something that's going to make them sick and kill them. So what can we think of here seeing this little boy? This little boy like Lord? You think of how cute Krishna must be? Yes? So we're all, they say never try to compete with babies or animals when you're speaking. But just imagine how cute Krishna attracts everybody in the window. All right, so now we're going to look at the last area, priorities and time management. And here Prabhupada saying one of his often very heavy things. You're a human being. Don't work hard day and night for the sense gratification that's available for being the dogs and the hogs in the stream. You have to find some time for the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. It says work 8 hours at most. Either in the afternoon or the evening, a householder should associate with devotees to hear about the incarnations of Krishna and his activities, and thus be gradually liberated from the clutches of life. You can say, but Urmila, if I only work 8 hours, I won't be able to afford my home. Get a smaller one. I knew a devotee who had three jobs. He was working 80, 90 hours a week. I said, why are you working so hard? He said, for my family. I said, Prabhu, you haven't even seen your family. Prabhupada tells the story of a little boy that in India when he was there. And he said, this father was going to work, at 5 in the morning and coming back at 10 at night. Prabhupada said he was there. The child was 3 years old. And he saw his father and looked at his mother. He said, who's that man? What is the point? Even materially, even if you're a gross materialist, they say no one on their deathbed ever said, I should have worked harder. They'll say things like, I should have spent more time with my family. No. We don't need to have 5 bedrooms and 3 bathrooms and a flat screen TV in every room and a BMW or 2 BMWs in the garage and a great big yard that all you ever do is cut the grass. We don't actually need that to be happy. We really, really don't. I know we're all in America, and I know in America we're supposed to do that, and maybe that's what some of you came to America to do. But we don't need to do that at the expense of our spiritual lives. And if you can do that and have a spiritual life, very good. No problem. Have big programs in your house. Have a festival out in your backyard. But if it's killing your spiritual life, downsize. Find some way. Talk to Krishna. Krishna, my work is killing me. I don't have any time anymore for my sadhana. I'm always running to work. And one devotee wrote me like this recently. She recently went back to work. Her child is about 1 year old. And she said, I'm going from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. and I don't have any time to chant. Well, why are we going from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m.? I mean, this is one of the austerities of the mind, to be satisfied with what we can earn by living honestly. Okay, then some scheduling. Prabhupada talked about how when he was a householder, that he didn't chant all of the 16 rounds at once, that he said. He said he chanted 4 rounds before each meal and 4 rounds before retiring in the evening. In this way, 16 rounds could be chanted without difficulty. He laughed and said, if you don't take prasad before chanting your 4 rounds, you'll be sure to get them chanted. This is also, I find, a very good way to read. You can say, you can have the books on your phone, yes? Yes, you can have Bhagavad Gita on your phone, Bhagavatam on your phone, yes? Everybody has a phone?
Yes.
Yes, you have a phone? Okay, very good. Before you eat each meal, read one screen. You understand? You don't have to have a monk type of sadhana when you're a householder. If you think, well, the way I have to have sadhana, I have to have sadhana from 4:30 to 9:30 every morning. It's not going to work. But you can find ways to have sadhana within your life as it is. And that may also change. So the way you're going to do your sadhana when you have a 1-month-old baby, and the way you're going to do your sadhana when your kids are all in high school, you know, the way you're going to do your sadhana when you're in school, the way you're going to do it in your job, that may change. So we don't just have to have this copy-paste, you know, I'm going to copy-paste from the people who live in the ashram, and I'm going to have it just like that at home. And have some program of sadhana that works with you. So you want to work with your own individual situation. Don't just copy-paste other people's situations. Well, somebody else does it like this. I visited a home once in Pune, in Mumbai, where the lady had a full-on temple, you know, marble altar, Radha Krishna, Gaurita, Jagannath installed deity. She did 5 artifacts a day, changed their dresses twice a day. That's all she did. It was like she was living in a temple. And you say, well, I have to do that to have sadhana. And be creative, be flexible. Maybe the way you're going to read the books is on audiobooks. You can't really understand how fortunate we are to be able to understand and speak English. You can get all of Srila Prabhupada's books as audiobooks in English. That's not true if you just speak Czech. No, there's none of Prabhupada's books audiobooks in Czech. Or in Italian. But in English, all of Prabhupada's books, many of the books of the Goswamis, they're there as audiobooks. You can listen while you cook lunch, while you wash the dishes, while you drive in your car. I know a devotee that memorized Chaitanya Charitamrita by listening to the audiobooks in his car. I know a devotee who memorized the Bhagavad Gita by listening to audiobook as she was walking between classes at the university. And different solutions at different times in your life. We talked about having desired activities and recreation in Krishna's service, but also in your regular sadhana. Find something you're doing regularly as part of your sadhana that you really like. That you really like. Do you really like to read? Well, especially do that. Do you really like to do rajas? Especially do that. Have some part of your daily sadhana where you're doing something you really enjoy, and then prioritize. So for this, we have a movie, and hopefully it will work. I mean, sometimes I thought I should come to the class with a jar of sand. And you might say, well, you know, Urmila, it might not work. I might put Krishna first and I might not get to all the sand. That's okay. Yeah, I used to have a physical inbox instead of an electronic inbox. And every couple months I'd go through the physical inbox and there'd always be something that had expired. And it didn't matter. Life went on. All these little things that we do, I'll chant later, I'll read later, first I gotta do this, first I gotta do that, first I gotta do this, first I gotta do that. My dear friends, when we die, our entire life is going to be two sentences in the newspaper. Now, if you're a really big and important devotee, we will give you one paragraph in Bhaktivedanta. If you're really, really big, we'll give you a whole article in Bhaktivedanta, 2,500 books, for your whole life. You can try an experiment. Take someone who you love, who loves you, and say, can I talk to you for 2 hours about everything I did today? Who cares? All these things that we're putting in front of Krishna don't matter to anyone. All right, we're going to go through everything. So for absorption in Krishna, see Krishna in the material energies, he describes in Gita, and remember his name, qualities, form, and pastimes. For our life as service, see that everything belongs to Krishna. Take care of our body, family, home as a service to Krishna, and do everything with great attention. For pressures for negative things, have a higher taste, associate with devotees, do things you enjoy in Krishna's service, have recreation in Krishna's service, use excuses of health, etc., to avoid sinful things, and have an occupation that doesn't involve sin. For prioritizing, work 8 hours at most, put Krishna first, be creative, find solutions that change for you and change as your life changes. So thank you very much. I hope you found this helpful. And if you'd like to come to our extended 8-hour seminar of interactive fun activities next weekend, you are invited to make the trek back to New Vrindavan for the Festival of Inspiration. If you also enjoyed this talk, of course, was based on the Bhagavad Gita as it is by Asa Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. If you don't already have a copy at home, you are really missing out. Please get yourself a copy before you leave. If you already have several copies at home, please follow the example of that young man and pick up a copy or two or three or four for your friends. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Let us express our gratitude to Mother Vimla by loudly joining 3 times. Hare forgot, actually no, I did not have the guts to introduce. You want to introduce her? Usually we should do that in the beginning, but
there's no point in doing it again.
Still, actually I want them to know. There is a reason. Actually.
Well, there's only one reason you introduce people. The reason you introduce people is so that they'll be attentive to the class.
I agree, actually.
There's actually no other reason.
No, it doesn't.
Because otherwise, see, if you don't introduce someone, then they have to build trust on their own, and it takes about 15-20 minutes to build trust. And if you introduce someone and they think, oh, that's a person I should listen to, and then you have trust right away, so it's too late. If you want to find, there's a Wikipedia article about me.
That's true. So anyway, you know, let us express our gratitude to her again, you know. Thank you very much. That is the introduction, actually.
Mataji, we all know you very well.
You all know everything about me already. And still you're listening to me after knowing everything.
You know, everyone heard your Manasiksha in Farmington Hills.
So I brought up a few of the same examples. Doesn't hurt to hear them again.
Right? Yeah.
And your YouTube videos from other temples.
Oh, very really. Yes, so you all already know.
Yeah.
I'm a nonsense rascal in the material world trying to serve Srila Prabhupada. So hopefully you can help me do that. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. So now you should all, you know, literally, and I don't know the process here.
Hare Krishna. How much time do you have? A couple of minutes for any questions.
Please pack your stuff if you're not packed. And I think first prayer is expected to come back
to our
devotees. We should go back and start making boxes of prasad, and some boxes should go there, and some boxes should go in the car, in the bus, and the boxes should go in the car. So if we leave at least you target the cost cutting for the 45 minutes.